I'd like to call a Transportation Finance Division to order. We do have a quorum. Some of the other members have checked in and they have a bill. Other committee will be coming back and forth. Representative Moreno, you are ready?
Mr. Chair, members, I would move House File 2003. And Mr. Chair, I think this, by the end of this, we're going to find it. It probably has to go to Finance. But I'm not sure about that.
Did you check as a chair of Finance? It could either go to Finance or General Register.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a bit of a complicated problem. I'm happy for it to go to the General Register, and I'll make that my motion.
It's got
to
go to Finance. That takes care of that. Yeah. Representative Morrow moved House File 2003. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, this bill involves an acute problem that exists right now with about 15 to 20 transit operators throughout the state of Minnesota. The bill before you is to provide the long-term fix. I'm going to get to the short-term problem in a moment when Mr. Gottfried from MnDOT Business or Transit comes before us. But, Mr. Chair, members, I thought it would be first best to explain what the problem is that this bill tries to fix. And Ms. Eric Trent, who is with me today, will describe that problem.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak about House File 2003. My name is Linda Elstrand. I am the Transportation Director for the TriCap Transit Connection, which serves rural Benton, Morrison, and Stearns counties. The modified language that's outlined in House File 2003 is very important to programs like TriCap, who need their state payments spread out more evenly throughout the year. The current legislation releases about 17% of our allocation in late January, another 8% in May, and then nothing until mid-July. By that time, we at TriCap have incurred a negative balance of about $200,000, and a small agency like ours just does not have the cash reserves to continue operating under that circumstance. The risk is that we'll have to cease operation until we get our next payment. House File 2003 would release the state payments on a schedule that is much more closely aligned with our expenditure of the funds and thus keep us financially viable.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I might ask Mr. Gottfried to join us from MnDOT to explain the relationship between the general fund payments and the payments that come from the NVEST account and how that's causing the problem for these operators.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and committee members, what Linda has outlined in her program with TriCap is not unique to TriCap and those type of agencies. It is a problem that's across that all transit systems have to cash flow the project, a funding cost associated with it. It is estimated that about 17 to 20 properties that are similar to the TriCap system are in acute situation, meaning there's a cash flow that's significantly higher than their agency can actually afford and are at risk, as Linda has pointed out. What we're looking at is that the state funding currently backloads the state dollars with the invest flowing in and July payments and also November payments that marry up with payments that occur, only one payment of state funds occur for general fund in January, in the first half of the year. So what it essentially does is make 75% of all state funds come to a transit property in the second half of the year. Only 25% of that is in the first half of the year, which inevitably builds in an automatic cash flow issue for the transit property.
Any questions? Representative Holbert.
Well, Mr. Chair, does MnDOT support this bill?
MnDOT is in more or less a neutral position relative to the legislation that currently indicates to us of how we have to specifically pay out the general funds and the NVEST funds. We do recognize and acknowledge that this is a cash flow problem, and it does cause, as I indicated, several properties an acute cash flow issue at the local level.
And
Representative Holder.
Mr. Chair, if I might, will, if House File 2003 is put into law, will this cause a cash flow problem for the Greater Minnesota Transit funding account?
Okay. Yes, Chair, Representative Holder. What we're looking at is that, yes, that will cause a cash flow issue for the state because the funding mechanisms, as they were identified as state statutes, as actually representing the state funds as they flow into us. Funds are indicated that we get a July payment of INVEST, one in July and another one in November, which we match with the payments that we send out to the transit properties. This would require, for lack of a better way to terminize it, put a terminology on it, is an advance payment to even out. The legislation looked at four even payments of 25-25, first payment in January at 25%, second payment in April at 25%, another payment in July at 25%, and the last payment is 24% with the 1% retainage. The serendipitous situation of that language, it does actually reflect a more accurate retainage for audit purposes than the current language. Right now, there is no retainage on INVEST funds for audit purposes. However, that second payment, that 25% in April, does not cover the cost or the funds that we have available to us. We do not currently have those funds. So this legislation, if it is passed for fiscal '09, essentially would mean that we would have to have an additional $7.6 million added to our funding capacity.
And
that's
Mr. Chair, is this being held over for possible inclusion? Is that the intent of this bill?
No, we were going to send this one to the Finance Committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, is there a finance or a fiscal note on it?
There's a small fiscal. Wait a minute. You have it. We have it here, too.
Do you have it or you don't?
I'm taking a leave here. There's no fiscal note on it. No, there's not a fiscal note on this one.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we just heard that it was going to cost $7.6 million.
Oh, Representative Holberg, it's not completed. That's right. What it is. The fiscal note.
Well, Mr. Chair, if it costs $7.6 million of general fund money, is it all general fund or?
Mr. Chair, if I might. Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, you're absolutely right. This is the problem here. There's a two-step thing going here. One is the language, evening out the payments. And the second problem, as Mr. Gottfried has explained, is that especially for these 17 to 20 companies, we have an immediate cash flow problem. This is a problem I brought to the attention of Chair Leader and to we've been working with fiscal staff to try to figure out, is there a way to move $7.6 million into the fiscal year 09 to also appropriate the money in the 10-11 biennium in a way that evens out that payment. That's the discussion I hope to have with continue to have with the chair and with fiscal staff. We're trying to figure out ways that we can authorize MnDOT to spend an additional $7.6 million in fiscal year 09, appropriate money in the 10-11 budget that helps to cover the payment that was made in 09. So you're absolutely right. I have a $7.6 million problem that I've got to figure out. This bill, evening out the payments, I'm happy to have either hold in the Finance Committee, wait till we figure out what the transportation finance budget is and the mechanism for making this move. My concern in part, Representative Holberg, and I think you're right on point, is that every day that goes by for these folks in 09, they're closer and closer to shutting down doors before July 1st. So I've got an immediate fiscal problem. I've got a long-term issue I'm trying to address with the bill.
And, Mr. Chair, I mean, I see this bill was just introduced in March. I'm assuming there was some ability to project this cash flow problem earlier. I mean, I don't know why this would leave this committee if you need money and targets, and there's got to be a solution here, and we're shifting in the wrong way. Everything's shifting for the other way in education, et cetera, and to shift back this way, I'm sure it's going to be a challenge.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, I'm certainly open to the guidance of the committee or the chair on how to proceed with this specific bill. You're right. I just found out about this in March when we heard from Ms. Elstrand and then some other carriers in about the same situation. I think Ms. Elstrand contacted her representative, who then contacted me, and then we put the pieces together and realized this wasn't an isolated incident, but actually an acute problem resulting from the way that the payments between General Fund and MDES were scheduled. Trying to fix that problem, we thought we might be able to cash flow the immediate problem. I won't speak for MnDOT, but I think MnDOT realized at some point in March it couldn't even cash flow this problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question I have is, if we don't pass this, we still have a $7.6 million deficit or a hole that we have to find a way to fill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe from Mr. Goffey that there is a $7.6 million problem for the 17 to 20 or so operations throughout our state that needs to be addressed. You're right. It is a problem, regardless of whether we lay this bill over, hold on to it, send it to finance.
Representative Nelson. So this what this bill is trying to do is deal with that 7.6 plus, try and straighten this out in the long term. So we're doing a long term fix to a problem, and hopefully this won't occur again. Or I guess that's the question I have.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, when we introduced this bill, I didn't know the 7.6 immediate problem that MnDOT was unable to cash flow. I found that out within the last 2 weeks or so, perhaps. So that's something that's more recently come to my attention.
Yes, Representative Nelson, and
just
I
one more question
here.
So the 7.6, the 7.6 is separate from what this bill does. This bill tries to smooth it out. The 7.6 problem is there whether we do this bill or not.
That is correct. Mr. Goffey might want to expand, but that's the way I understand it.
Thanks. No, you're correct.
Representative Beard?
Well, Representative Nelson kind of touched on my first question. Was I don't see money in this bill. I just see a schedule of payments being smooth. And Representative Morrow, I see that it's to be effective July 1st, so it looks like the proposal that we have actually going to take effect in the next fiscal biennium here if we pass this bill as it stands at the moment. And then just for clarification for the members of the committee, it looks to me as if this actually touches two pots of money, one on 1.9, where you struck that line, and then again on 1.19, the Minnesota Transit account, that's the MVEST money, just to be clear, correct? And so we're actually handing checks out from two pots of money in the existing language.
Mm-hmm.
And so the effect of the bill will tell MnDOT, wherever you get the money, it's all aggregated and do it on this new schedule. Are we assuming then that the first month is the first month of our fiscal year or the first month of the calendar year? That was my clarifying question.
Representative Morrow?
In line 1.10.
And I may turn
first month of the contract period.
Mr. Goffey as well, of the contract period.
I don't know. Is that January? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Yeah, the answer for that too is all our contracts run on a calendar year, so it's a January through December contract. So the way the current language would be would affect the 2010 contract at that point.
Which start, Mr. Chair, which then would start after January 1st. So even though this is effective July 1st, that means that the checks that start coming in, the 7th month is on line 1.14, or the 10th month on 1.6, that would not be the ones this year. That would start, this all would take effect then, practically speaking, in January.
I would turn that over to Representative. I would turn that over to my attorney at this point in time. But if I'm reading the black and white, I think essentially, if the legislation is being read exactly like this, then I think I would be MnDOT would be subject to taking a 25% payment in July. If I'm reading that correctly, if this language is it's a good point to be made. So.
Well, the reason I bring it up, Mr. Chair, the reason I bring it up is if they're expecting 50% of something and we're going to cut it back to 25 in July and what is 10, October, roughly, that could be problematic, too, just while we're fixing this or thinking about it. And I applaud your efforts, Representative Morrow. Let's think that through, too, how this is going to work.
Representative Holbert, did you have a
Well, Mr. Chair, what is MnDOT going to do if nothing passes?
Current legislation would stand, and the payments would be as they are currently now scheduled. So as of July 1, they would get a 50% invest payment and a 40% GF payment. Cash flow issue hopefully would be gone at that point in time. Meanwhile, these 20 properties, actually it's about 22 that we've done recently, that we're indicating that they're going to have a severe cash flow issue by middle of April.
And Mr. Chair,
yes,
do these rural transit providers have the authority to do short-term borrowing to make up for their cash flow problem?
Mr. Blackby?
Yes. Representative, I believe various properties have, as local units of government have, their ability to borrow, but on the other hand, the private nonprofits have various different limits on their budget and how much they can leverage and borrow. And this is why TRICAP represents one of about 16 different agencies that fall into this kind of category that would have limited capacity. I don't want to overspeak that they have no capacity, but I think they would have very limited capacity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow, do you have any comment?
Well, none of that, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm happy to have this bill laid over. I know we meet again next week. We might be able to... issues or questions have been changing hourly at this point as we've been trying to figure out a way to get them money now to actually find a pot of money and to make sure that that money has a source to be repaid from. So I think that Representative Holbrook, Representative Beard, and Representative Nelson have raised good points, but we do need to come back to this bill because this is a problem that has to get resolved.
Representative Godfrey, there's no way that you transfer or in. How it's transferred in MnDOT as far as temporarily transfer some funds?
We have some limited capacity to do that, but most of the funding that we had available for us for this calendar year have already been allocated and programmed. So our flexibility has been greatly reduced. It is possible that we could look at one or two agencies and maybe see if we can try to mitigate that. The reason why it became an acute issue is across the board effect, and as I said, we've got about 22 agencies that fall into this situation where it's getting pretty critical come April 15th. For our ability to fix one or two is the quasi drop in the bucket.
You want to lay this over?
That'd be my preference, Mr. Chair.
We'll lay this over till next Tuesday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Representative Liebling, we can get you next. Where's that go? Representative Liebling, you have someone to move your bill, otherwise I'll move it.
I haven't designated anyone, Mr. Chair, okay. So if you would move it, I would appreciate it.
Chair, move House File 1164 to be recommended to pass and go to the General Register.
That would be fine, Mr. Chair, if the committee would want to lay it over for possible inclusion in your finance bill.
We won't have the finance bill is complete.
Okay, that's fine, Mr. Chair. Thank you. But thank you for hearing the bill, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, a different version of the bill is in the Senate policy transportation bill, transportation policy bill, I'm told. And
Liebling, if I may interrupt, we're basically going to discuss the fiscal note. My understanding, is that correct?
That's fine. Actually, Mr. Chair, I haven't seen the fiscal note, but I've been told that it's $58,000 or something like that.
Do you want to give us when the page when you give the fiscal note? You got one.
Please. Okay, I've got one here. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, and Mr. Chair, let me just, if I could just briefly explain the bill, because I don't think that all the members probably understand, or I know all the members on this committee are not in transportation policy, so they may not be familiar with it, but what this bill does is it says that people who have been, have a suspension, a driver's license suspension, who are then convicted of another suspension, or convicted of driving after suspension, would not be resuspended. And this is a concept that's been around for a long time. It's supported by a lot of folks on different sides of the aisle and in from different points of view, including Representative Cornish, who everybody knows is a police chief, and Representative Lesh, who's a prosecutor, and people support this as good policy. In terms of the fiscal aspect of it, I think that the fiscal note may not actually represent the true cost. We believe that this bill actually will save money. And the reason for that is that currently, there is, under current law, a license is not resuspended if a person has a license suspension and then is stopped driving after suspension. They do not get a new suspension if they were suspended the first time because of failure to appear in court or failure to pay a fine. And what this means is that the department right now has to hand sort the suspensions to see what the underlying reason is. And that's current law. So the department is right now hand sorting the suspensions as they come in to decide who should get a new suspension and who should not. What we're doing is simply changing that so that they would no longer have to sort for the underlying cause of the suspension. It would simply be if they're driving under suspension, if they're being resuspended for a violation of 171.24 subdivision 1, they would not be getting a new suspension. So what could happen is that if the courts are, when they send the notification to the Department of Vehicle Services, if they simply would say on there that the offense is a subdivision 1 offense or 2 or 3 or whatever it is, there would be no need for this kind of hand sort process. It could be done by computer. Or if it is still done by hand, it's no different than what they're doing now. But hopefully, I understand that the division is getting some new technology and upgrading, and given that, this should be something that is very easy to do. Mr. Chair, I have with me some copies of just the statute, if people would want to see it, just to, so they can kind of see what the statutory scheme is here, and maybe that would make it a bit easier to understand.
We'll see if we have questions. Other than that, we should be concerned only about the fiscal portion.
I don't know if I'm explaining well why I'm saying the fiscal note really shouldn't be a fiscal note. We believe that there should be zero cost. In fact, we believe that this will save money because it will be less of a sorting problem. And that there won't be so many repeats, so that it will actually save money because the Department of Vehicle Services won't have to do this hand sort they're currently doing.
Are there questions? Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Leland. Is there somebody from the department that can come down and speak to that issue? I would tend to concur with Representative Liebling here. I don't know why there would be an additional fiscal note on here.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick from Driver and Vehicle Services with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And the reason that there's a fiscal note is because the court sends us convictions. It does not list the subdivision. It lists the statute, and it doesn't list subdivisions. And that is why there, and we wouldn't, even if our computer system was upgraded, the court does not send us subdivisions. They just send the statute number. And so the court system would also have to be upgraded for that. We're not writing the fiscal note based on that, but as all of you know, We are working on a four-year project to upgrade our driver license and motor vehicle system. This could be put as part of that system, but it won't be done in the next year. And we also would not be able to mandate that the courts change their system so that they could start sending us statute numbers with subdivisions, because that would take programming on their part as well. We interface with them, and our interface is just set up. And so right now we do have one staff person that has to manually go through all the convictions, because we have to look and see if there's other suspensions, withdrawals, or revocations. That determines what the violation and the conviction would be on the record. It isn't a simple process. We do believe that this will cause more, because we don't think this will lessen the amount that we do review. And we had staff look at our statistics and then look at the statutes that are involved. And so that was how we came up with our fiscal note for a half-time position. We already have one full-time person that reviews over 800 violations every day. And so that's the reason that we are, that is certainly one of the reasons why we are upgrading our information system, because we have so many manual workarounds that we have to do with our current system. In addition to that, though, there are some programming costs that are involved, and so that was also listed as part of this, that we would have to do it, and because of the time frame involved, we would need to charge additional consultants to help us with that programming. So those are the reasons for the fiscal impact. It certainly isn't us trying to get additional funding, because this comes out of our special revenue account. This does not come from any other revenue source than what we raise in terms of the fees that we collect. As all of you know, we're a fee-based system. And so this isn't general fund money. We're talking about money from our driver services revenue, special revenue fund.
This is your fiscal note. I mean, you agree with the fiscal note. One half position and also 36. $1,000 for the first year.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. I signed off on this fiscal note. The department signed off on the fiscal note. Our finance director signed off on the fiscal note.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. McCormick, could you tell the committee what a reinstatement fee is after a suspension, and how much you'd have to raise the fee in order to cover this much cost?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, for a driving suspension, reinstatement fee is $20. I don't know how much we'd have to charge. We'd have to go back and look at how much we'd have to charge for it. We'd have to look at how many. I remember offhand how many suspensions versus revocations we do in a year's time, so I'd have to go back and look at that. What we talked about, I talked about with Ms. Zewers, was the fact that we would have to ask for an appropriation from our special revenue account to cover the costs. If we were doing it at this point in time, we'd have to have statutory authority to change the reinstatement fee. So you would have to make that decision if you wanted to change the reinstatement fee for us to be able to charge more for reinstatements.
Representative Champion?
Perhaps I didn't quite understand something that you said, Ms. McCormick. I thought I understood you to say that right now the process is a manual process and requires staff currently to go through all of the documentation in order to clearly identify exactly what the suspension was for, and that there is staff time already allotted to that. And if that's true, please help me understand how that same staff person couldn't continue to do what they're doing right now, and therefore not causing any added expense, but would in fact be an existing expense that you currently have.
Mr. Chair and Representative Champion, the reason is because the person is working full-time right now. The person we have doing this is doing the 800 a day, and that is what she gets done during the day, because you're talking about this. It is sent to us over, we have a pass every night of conviction from the courts to our system, but then we have to look up every driving record of these convictions to determine what subdivision it is and how that interfaces with the system. And certainly, as I've told this committee many times, is this is one of the problems with having a system from the 1970s, because this isn't a system that was just built yesterday. So we're talking about a mainframe system, which means that it only does batch processing. It cannot electronically communicate. Electronically communicate with the courts and pass information back and forth. So they send over the batch, and then we have to review it every day to ensure that we're taking the correct action.
Rep. Van Lieber, do you have a follow-up? Representative?
Either one.
Okay.
But I think you said that the person who currently looks through this 800 plus, you know, these documents that from like 800 people a day is working full time, and the fiscal note would account for someone working half time. And so are you suggesting that the volume of work is going to increase as a result of this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Champion, yes, that's what I said, that this would be, we are anticipating that this would be an additional 400 driving afters that would need to be reviewed, because it depends if it's driving after revocation or if it's driving after suspension or if it's driving after withdrawal. There's various types of driving afters that we have, and so that does make a difference depending on what the other convictions are. And I didn't talk in front to all committee members at the last hearing on this, and I know you're only dealing with the fiscal impact, but Gene Ryan, who's with the department as well and from Office of Traffic Safety, has been working on some of these issues in that committee that I did talk about in the policy committee, the driver license sanctions committee. So I may see if she has different information she wants to...
If we could just hold that for a minute. If we have some questions, do you want to have those before? And yes. Representative Liebling also wants to make a comment. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what Representative Champion and I are sitting here having a sidebar about it, it looks like they get down to line 2.16, Ms. McCormick, and you're asking the person where they had been looking right, we're just going to ask them to look left, and we're grappling with why that costs us $36,000 a year to look from one page to another. That's what we're thinking. Maybe we need to come over and have a field trip and actually look over their shoulder and see what's happening, but it's just not intuitive to us that asking someone to stop looking at a back issue would cost more money. We would think intuitively it would cost less money. So maybe the next testifier can understand what it is we're grappling with here when we're trying to believe your, when we want to believe your fiscal note, but intuitively it's looking like it's backwards. That's what we're trying to say here.
Okay, we'll look at the next. So Representative Liebling has a comment prior.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Beard, I think that's exactly where I'm coming from as well. And, you know, also right now the information they have to look for to make this division is much finer information. It's, they have to look to the reason for the suspension. What I'm thinking is that if this bill passes, they don't have, the court doesn't have to send that one at all. The court knows if they're being, if the ticket is for driving after suspension, and presumably they just won't even send that one over. Also, the Public Safety Finance Committee, has some, changes this year that are coming from the courts to simplify and streamline the way the courts are doing division of fines and all kinds of things, and I have a feeling that the courts are going to be kind of ahead of this game and be able to do things in a more efficient way. And if they can't figure out to not send certain ones, I mean, I just can't believe that the courts won't be able to just not send that category at all. So I think we'll be saving a lot of money there.
And you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, thank you for explaining, because that's some of the thought process that's going on in our head. At least I'll speak for myself as I try to come to terms with this fiscal note, and we're here for the fiscal note. So knowing, I hope, did we make it clear what I'm thinking here, and can you talk to it then if you have different information?
Okay.
Explain to us where I'm missing something here.
My name is Jean Ryan. I'm from the Minnesota Office of Traffic Safety with the Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chair, Representative Beers, I think maybe the misunderstanding, and I'm not sure, but in listening, what happens, the process is that these violations are sent to the Driver and Vehicle Services Office, and the computer automatically suspends the driving record. So then what they have to do, so it's automatically suspended. Then they have to go through them and find out the ones that should not have been suspended and remove those from the driving record. So, and now instead of removing 800 or so, they're removing the additional ones from the driving record that were not, that you're now changing the law so that they should not suspend the record on those particular ones. So that, so not only the ones for, they're removing all the suspensions for unpaid fines, they're now going to be removing the suspensions for all the other reasons that the license was suspended as well under the, under 171.24 subdivision 1. So the manual process of removing additional suspensions of records from people's driving records will take additional people's time.
Representative Beard, you have a follow-up for you guys.
Do I have that look on my face, Mr. Chair? What I'm hearing is a couple members are starting to see the light. I'm sorry to say I'm not yet, but another question is forming in my alleged mind, and it's this. Isn't there a better way to do this so we don't put staff members in your office in this boat in the first place? Or is that what you were talking about with the software upgrade?
Ms. Ryan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, that's more related to driver and vehicle services. And yes, that's certainly going to be part of this project. But I don't see that getting done any time in the next couple years because, as you know, it's a four-year project. So we aren't expecting the project to be done in 2012. And so we aren't anticipating that we'd be able to do it any sooner. And that's what, I'm sorry I wasn't as explicit as I needed to be, but the courts, it would take them work not to send it to us, and plus the law requires that we receive that information from the courts because we're talking about a conviction, and we could be talking about masking as well, and with commercial drivers, and so they have to send it to us. But our system cannot, it just automatically suspends, automatically letters go out, and we have to give 10 days due process before we actually do the suspension. And so what we're doing is we're taking those that would not no longer be suspensions, and we have to take those out so they're not sent inadvertently. And until we get the system fixed, we aren't able to do this. And the courts wouldn't be able to help us with that part of it. Certainly the goal would be that the courts and DVS, eventually we could send it, we could send subdivisions so we wouldn't have to do all this manual work. But that would be also, that would cause some expense to the courts, just based on the fact that I know that we haven't been able to do that right now through MNSIS.
If I may just interject, it appears that it's acceptable to you if you get the money and the staff, and that's the way I read it right now. That's a question whether it can be done or not. You say it shouldn't be done if you don't, I mean, it's going to increase your cost if you don't get this extra money and extra staff. So that's the question we should be addressing here. Is that agreeable? Is that what you understand, Ms. McCormick?
Well, Mr. Chair, the department would, I think you testified in the policy committee that we would recommend that this bill not be passed this year because we have a driver license sanction committee that we believe this needs more review, and we would like to wait until we get those recommendations at the end of September, because we believe that we need to look at all sorts of all of our sanctions and look at, is there a different way that we should be doing things?
Yeah, Representative Nelson, you had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Ms. McCormick. I guess what I'm hearing here and listening to what's going on, that you're saying that the new computer system that you're saying is a four-year project, when is that supposed to be done?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, it should be completed by July 1st, 2012.
Okay, Mr. Chair. So then, Ms. McCormick, if we were to delay this implementation to coincide with your new computer system, I'm hearing you say that you could build this into the new computer system. Would there then be no cost to this above and beyond what you're already programming?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, as far as I know, without talking to the courts, that would be able to be done as part of this our system rebuild.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess the question I have, and rhetorical, so if we put this as a mandate for the department to do and include it as part of your reconfiguring or reprogramming the new computer, we'd accomplish both things. It wouldn't be as soon as this bill would do it, but it would get it accomplished, and it wouldn't, then the fiscal note would go away, is the way I'm reading it.
We have a Representative Wealthy had a question too. Wealthy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I don't know if they wanted to respond. Or was that a rhetorical question? Okay, I'll go ahead and ask my question. So, Representative Liebling, I know you brought this forward, or I'm assuming you brought this forward to save the court some cost. And that, I'm listening to this testimony, I was going along with what Ms. McCormick was saying, until you got to the point when you said that the courts will have to send more to you, or you're going to end up having to review more records, and that there might be additional costs, there might be additional work. So, Representative Liebling, one point that we haven't discussed here is the savings to the court. Can you give us any indication what the courts are anticipating for cost savings? Will this save them administrative work? I mean, if we're looking at having to pick up a half of a FTE at the department, I could justify that if we're saving a lot of administrative work on the court. So can you clarify that?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Welty, thanks. I wanted to get to that point because I noticed that the fiscal note here says the bill's not anticipated to have an impact on the workload of the courts. And in fact, the very reason for bringing this bill is because we believe it does have an impact. And I don't have an official position from the court, but I have discussed this with Sue DeSalle, who's the state courts administrator, and you know, and I believe she's in support of this kind of an effort. And certainly the public defenders are in support of it. And one of the things that's happened right now is that the courts have put forward what's called a payables list. They've taken a number of the smaller offenses, including this one, I think, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, that are now on the payables list, which means that people can pay a ticket and not even appear in court. And the reason that they're doing this is because of the fiscal situation the courts are in, and the prosecutors and the public defenders, and everybody's looking to take the little stuff and unclog the courts so they can focus on the big stuff and the things that really do impact public safety. And that's the impetus behind this. It's something that all the players recognize. This gets people continuously snagged in the courts and creates a lot of workload for a very marginal, if any, public safety benefit. And that's why all the players are looking to do this, to save some costs. I don't have a fiscal note for it on that side, but it's kind of as we're really looking at some fiscal restriction, and I'm sure you're all hearing about the courts and the difficulties they're under, and I know Representative Stevenson's on the Public Safety Finance Committee with me, you know what I'm talking about.
We're looking for ways to let them make better use of the limited funds they have, and we believe that this really will give us a lot of bang for the buck in that respect. And as I said, the people on both sides of the aisle and from different points in the system all kind of agree that this is a sensible kind of thing for that reason.
I think we've had a lot of discussion. We've got another question from Representative Holberg, and what Ms. Ryan wants to comment. I think we're ready to vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't see any savings reflected anywhere. And given that DPS is a fee-based system, is our vote going to be based on that they would do this with no fee increase? Is that what you're asking us to vote on here today? Or?
Holberg, there was a lot of discussion. I don't want to tell anybody how they want to vote. I don't know myself, really. When you hear this discussion, I think it's a matter of what you decide, if the court is going to save money or if it's going to cost. It would appear to me, I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chair, even if the courts do save money, they don't transfer it to DPS to cover their costs. There's nothing in this bill that protects what DPS needs to do, and we had a really large overhaul of all the fees and made sure that they covered the cost of the services for the individuals that were getting the services. And so I'm a little reticent to just throw more work without a fee.
We had a decision to make whether we should send it to finance, because whether $38,000 normally, I think if you remember, you would say the department would eat it, if that's the word we would use, basically, because it's not over $100,000, and I don't know. I mean, that's the question we have here, whether we should say that they would absorb it, or we have to worry about additional appropriation, because that's the problem. And I don't think I want to make that decision here. I think the committee should make that decision. And maybe Ms. Ryan can clear something up. You're going to talk.
I just, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just need to make one statement regarding public safety. Traffic fatalities are the number one cause of death between the ages of 1 and 33. These people that get their license suspended are engaging in terribly risky driving behavior. It's not easy to get your license suspended. They disregard that suspension and continue to drive and put everyone on the road in danger. When we say these are not, this isn't a public safety issue, it is a public safety issue, and it's a public safety for everyone on the roadway. And if anybody's going to lose a friend or family or neighbor or anybody, it'll be in a traffic. The most common way of losing the person is in a traffic fatality. So it is a public safety issue. You're 2 times more likely to be in a fatal crash with a suspended driver's license. So I needed to make that statement from the Office of Traffic Safety that this is a public safety issue as well. Thank you.
That's considered.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to think of this issue and how to proceed from here. We have a 2-year biennium, and I think Ms. McCormick said there is a study that's going on right now dealing with driver's license issues and how we're redressing all this. You know, and this is a question for you or perhaps for Mr. Burris. If we held this bill here until we come back next January, February, March, whenever, would the bill still be in the purview of this committee? That study would be passed, and perhaps we would have more intelligence or more information to make an intelligent choice regarding this issue if we did that, or if we hold it here, is the bill dead and has to start all over again next year? You follow my question?
Right. Listen, Representative, the bill would stay in our possession until for the next session. We'd still have it for next.
Okay, we'll just take it up then.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is I sympathize with what Representative Liebling is trying to do here, speaking personally. However, we've got a couple trained professionals here that make this thing work. Representative Holberg raised a good point. We just went through making them a fee-based system a couple years ago. Rather than making them absorb this, if indeed it is, and I have to trust them because I don't know how the department runs exactly, perhaps that would be a choice for us to make, would be to lay the bill over or table it until after this study and then bring it up again next year, and let Representative Liebling take it up then and then move it on if it makes sense to us. Just a thought.
You want to comment, Representative Liebling?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would ask the committee not to do that.
You know, as far as the public safety aspect of this, remember, these people already have a suspension. And if they've been caught driving after suspension, they are getting another ticket. They are theoretically at risk of jail. So we're not taking away penalties for doing this. We're simply taking away the bureaucratic snafu that happens here currently, under current law. Also, I really think that we did have a little bit of this discussion in policy about how quickly we need to move on this and whether we can wait for this group that's looking at all these things. And, you know, we are in a situation where when I had the talk with the course administrator, I mean, they're really feeling like we're going to kind of go over the cliff here when we have our new budget. And, you know, our current targets are pretty bad already. We may have to come back and do another budget that's a whole lot worse. I mean, we're looking at some really serious consequences come July 1st. And frankly, I'm still struggling with why it's costing them more money. I frankly really think it's going to cost them less money because they're going to get fewer of these things and they're not going to have a person go through 800 of them. They're going to have a lot fewer to go through. In terms of the safety issue as well, remember, we're not doing anything to the people who are driving after revocation or cancellation or disqualification. I mean, the people who have, you know, are the chronic drunk drivers and stuff, this doesn't affect them because they're not just driving after suspension. So I really don't believe this is going to hurt public safety, and I really think there is some urgency about getting it passed this year.
I'd like to ask Ms. McCormick a question. Was your special revenue, your fees increased this last year? If so, how has that affected your special revenue account? I mean, you increased fees, but how did it throughout the year? Are you getting exactly what you needed, or are you getting excess, or are you getting less?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the fees were increased last year just to help us build our information system, and so that's in a special technology account, and that can only be used for the MinLAR system that we're working on. It's not used for anything else. The fees have not been raised for a couple of years. And in terms of what we're bringing in, we are substantially below what we need on the vehicle side. We're managing. We're maintaining a 5% vacancy rate right now. Only in terms of the titles, our revenue has decreased about 20% this year. In terms of registration, it's stayed about even right now. So, and on the driver's side, we always have a very tight budget on the driver's side, but we're staying about even from last year. So.
Perfect. Perfect.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am sorry I had another meeting and so was late and didn't hear the author's initial explanation. But on the last speech, she suddenly caught my attention because I think when she argues the current context, I think we have to start thinking really carefully about the fact that we can't just cut budgets without doing things in substantially different ways, and that's what I hear the author arguing, that it is in the current context. Because I don't quite understand the bill, I don't know whether my suggestion will help, but is it possible to sunset what we're doing here? Because you're arguing that to help another segment of the system, we have to do things in a different way. Is that able to be sunsetted, or would you make that policy argument anyway outside of the context of this? That maybe that would be a way to.
Are you directing that to
To the author?
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman. If I'm understanding your question, whether this bill could be sunsetted, and I think this is something that's actually been around for a few years. It was carried at one time by Representative Lash, who's, as you know, is a city prosecutor who deals with these all the time, and I think it might have been carried by other people as well. So it's one of these policy changes that I think people have thought for quite a while really should happen.
I don't know that putting it in place with a sunset would really save anything, because it's kind of the upfront piece that we're sort of quibbling over about, because I think what I'm hearing is that the department will eventually be able to do it, no question, without additional cost, because they are going to be in this new computer system. So I think the real issue is whether is now rather than whether, you know, I think it would almost kind of go backwards to say let's do it temporary and then blink it off.
Oh. Mr. Chair?
Representative Holmberg.
I understand what you're saying, Representative Hausman, but we have a fee-based funding system here with DVS. And if the savings is going to be the courts, maybe the courts should consider if the savings are going to be substantial, a stipend or a payment to DVS of $20,000 or $30,000 to expedite this. But we, as members of the Transportation Committee, it's really not right if we set up a fee-based department and review those fees and haven't raised them for a number of years, that we dump an additional workload on them without any revenue to compensate for that.
I think Representative Liebling, I don't know if this could be, we maybe should lay this over till next session. If you, I think the committee is pretty well, unless you want to take a vote, that's up to you. We can get a vote, but it would appear to me that there's, I suppose in any bill, but there's a lot of confusion right now.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that maybe it seems to me that what maybe what we need to do is get a little more input from the court. And, you know, and I have to say, I don't really understand how the Department of Vehicle Services works either. It sounds like the members of this committee don't understand it either. And as a practicing attorney, I sure didn't understand it. But I'm just, even after all this discussion, I'm not understanding why this would add to their workload. I think it would decrease their workload. But what I think I need for the committee's comfort level is something from the courts explaining, hopefully, that the courts would not even be sending these to the department. So the department, I think, would have less of a stream of things to sort through rather than sorting them again. So maybe if we could maybe lay this on the table, and then with the committee's indulgence, if I can get some more information, maybe I could talk to the chair about perhaps bringing it back for a vote, because, you know, I understand the committee's dilemma here, but I just think we're missing a little piece of information that we probably need to straighten this out.
I think that would be it. And if we could avoid going back through the whole process, we spend a lot of time on it right now. If we just get that court thing, we can still, we still have some time in the Finance Committee.
Okay. Appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
That's the best. We'll lay the bill on.
Thank you.
We lay the bill over temporarily. Thank you. Representative Newton. Had someone looked at, I looked at, if we have two packets of minutes, someone would move the minutes. March 31st and April 2nd.
No.
April
2nd, should you want me to vote? Yeah, Rep. Dillard moved the March 2nd and April, March 31st and April 2nd minutes. Any corrections or additions or discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The minutes are adopted, are approved. I mean. Representative Newton, do you want to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to introduce House File 1356, and I'm not quite sure where it should go, whether it goes to Finance or for possible inclusion. Finance, okay. And also, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A3 amendment to House File 1356.
A3 amendment. Your A3 amendment, Representative Newton?
Yes.
You want to move that amendment?
Or yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newton moved the 1356 A3 amendment all to put the bill back in
the shape that we wanted.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The amendment is adopted.
Good. And Mr. Chair, to continue in that vein, on the amendment itself, I would like to have a delete all and have the bill only read from lines 110 to 122. And the reason is we have sort of a mixture here between MnDOT and Met Council, and the provisions I'm looking for are specifically addressed to Met Council.
In other words, that's basically Section 3.
Section 3, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Just through 120 or
110 through 122, Mr. Chair.
You want to move the amendment to the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do.
President, Mr. Barris, do you have that? Barris, I mean, not Barris.
Now
we'll deal with Matt.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm sorry, just to clarify, Representative Newton, is your intent then so that the bill only consists of Section 3 as it reads in the A3 amendment, so that it wouldn't affect the provisions relating to Greater Minnesota Transit would be eliminated?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Burris, that's correct.
Okay. In that case, I would recommend a separate oral amendment, which would, consist of page 1, delete sections 1 to 2.
Okay.
Right.
So what we have left, Mr. Chair, is section 3.
Yeah. We have an amendment to the amendment already.
Mr. Chair and members, my recommendation would be not to amend the amendment. It would be to amend the original bill to delete the two sections that deal with Greater Minnesota Transit.
That'll work. Yeah.
So you want to withdraw your amendment?
Yes, I'd withdraw the first amendment and substitute the amendment as suggested by Mr. Burris, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Chair, members, then the amendment would be to amend House File 1356 as amended, page 1, delete sections 1 to 2.
Representative Holmberg had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, convince me why we should treat veterans different in different areas of the state.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holmberg, right now it's because we've started this and I had worked with Mr. Shetman and thought we were addressing the entire state, realized later that it was only Met Council, and that at a later time we want to address the whole state. But as we just heard a little earlier, some of Greater Minnesota is struggling with finances. Met Council has already agreed that they can absorb the cost of this in their current budget. So I would like to get this part established now and then look at Greater Minnesota later.
And Mr. Chair, I would hope that at the very least before this comes to the floor that we could look at Greater Minnesota fixed route transit service in Rochester, St. Cloud, Duluth. I mean, I can see the issues with dial-a-ride services and the high subsidies and high population of senior citizens in particular counties, et cetera. But I hope that you would try really hard to, at least in a case where we have fixed route services across the state, that veterans are treated in the same way.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, yes, that was our intent, and I've worked with Representative Stevenson on this, and I think that part of it is my misunderstanding as to what Metcalfe's area was, and not having had a chance really to talk to MnDOT or the representatives for out-of-state transportation.
Hey, we have the Representative Newton amended the veto amendment, basically. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, this would be a separate oral amendment that would eliminate Section 1 and 2, so it would eliminate sections that would deal with Greater Minnesota Transit. The effect would be to leave the provision that's in the A3 amendment starting on 1.10. That would be the only section.
Mm-hmm.
If this amendment is, this oral amendment is adopted.
So we just have an oral amendment. We just have to vote on the oral amendment. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
You've all heard the oral amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Chair Leader. I do have Mr. Stedman here, and we have discussed this, and I'd like to have him testify.
Mr. Stedman?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Judd Stedman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to work with Representative Newton on this bill. I need to point out that what the bill does is when it takes away the provisions that deal with active duty members of men and women in the military, the only reason we're doing that is because there is currently a federal program that allows those folks to be reimbursed for that. So we would defer to that federal law that allows them to receive that reimbursement. And there is a fiscal cost to this, but what we have is a very rough estimate that is around the $100,000, $120,000 a year ballpark. And we think that this is the right thing to do and support Representative Newton's bill the way it is. Again, like I said, it is an estimate. We do have a limited fare right now that we charge 75 cents per ride, and we think that there are a number of moderately disabled folks who are able to use that limited fare. But so it's just a guesstimate that we put forward, but I'm not sure that it's even to the $140,000, $120,000 range. So we would like to move forward with this, and because we do believe it's the right thing to do. And one of the reasons why we think that the fiscal note is smaller than what it normally would be is because as far as a proof of identification, the men and women who are disabled and who are veterans actually have a card that is issued them by the VA that states that they are a recognized disabled veteran. So it'll be very easy for us to be able to have those folks, when they are aware that they have this ability to move forward or to come to the ride the transit system, that all they have to do is show that proper identification, and our drivers will be made very aware that we're allowed to let them ride for free.
Any questions or the testifier? Yes. Representative Severson, were you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just not so much to the testifier, but to the author. I think, you know, Representative Scott brought up a good point that freshmen usually bring a treat with them when they come to their first bill in the committee. And I would have expected that the sergeant major would have at least brought some MREs for us, maybe some scrambled eggs or something.
Mr. Chair, I think I still have some from the Korean War, if you want me to bring them in.
Are those meals refused by everybody? Is that what you want? If there are no further questions, Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 1356 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary?
Thank you.
House File 1356 is passed and was sent to the Finance Committee. Is Representative Eakin? Representative Eakin You have to move your bill, otherwise the chair will move it.
Yeah, it's good, Mr. Chair.
House file. The chair will move House File 1237, be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. And for the members of the members of the committee, we're only dealing with Section 32 of this bill. That deals with special license plates, Representative Holbert. It's on page 10 of 11.
Okay.
And Representative Eakin, I presume you have someone to testify, or can you explain the bill?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And as the chair leader said, this deals with Section 32. This is the DNR technical bill, and there's one change in here that deals with license plates, the critical habitat plates, and it adds one-ton pickup trucks to the list of those vehicles that would qualify for these critical habitat license plates. So, and I do have with me Assistant Deputy Commissioner Bob Meyer with me today of the DNR.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The language that's quoted in Section 32 is language that we've worked out, or Department of Public Safety asked us to put in this bill in correlation to the new series of critical habitat plates that you may have seen publicized that we recently had an online contest for. We're selecting four new designs that the Commissioner of DPS and the Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources will be approving here hopefully shortly. So while we were going through that process, the issue of the language that was amended several years ago that would allow critical habitat license plates to be personalized was brought up, and that the system to number and to do this personalization is not going to be in place until 2012. So we worked out some language with them to add to this bill that you'll see the actual changes take place on page 14. That will allow owners of one-ton pickup trucks or recreational vehicles to be eligible for special critical habitat plates on or after, it used to be July 1st or January 1st, 2006. We're changing that to 2012. And we're also clarifying that the critical habitat license plates, we're striking the word for designs for which were selected under Subdivision 2 on or after January 1st, 2006. Allowing them to say that they may be personalized according to statute after January 1st, 2012. Again, this is because of software and technology changes, and we want to make sure that everything is in place before this change is effective.
Okay. Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is a Mr. Burr's question or Ms. McCormick, and I don't have any problem with your bill. I think it's a great idea. But I think we've kind of onesies and twosies, the one-ton special plates, and are we at the point where we should just allow special plates on one-tons? Because I think they only allow it for the veterans' plates. And so I don't know who has the answer to that, but I'm happy with your bill here, but if we've gotten to a point where over half of the special plates are allowed on one-tons, then we should just do it for everybody.
Representative Holbert, I can comment on that. These plates that were issued didn't come through the Transportation Committee. They never came through our committee. That has been bothering me for quite some time. And that was also true of the Susquehanna plates. This committee did not see those, and we had jurisdiction on them. And that's why there's an amendment in your packet. Did you see it, Mr. Miners? It's the Chair's Amendment. What this does, it raises the fee to $100, the total. Right now the law says $10 plus 30. And this would raise the total to $100, and Mr. Myers is happy because there will be $100 to DNR, the way the bill is written. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not quite sure. I would defer to committee counsel on that. It may severely impact the amount of dollars that we do get for the critical habitat program through the license plate. So because right now, as you did say, it's a $10 fee plus $30 or more. Individuals can contribute more if they want to, and these dollars are used to purchase critical habitat or match critical habitat dollars for acquisition and restoration activities. So I would defer to fiscal staff if these dollars would go to the department, if they would go to the Department of Public Safety.
anyone want to comment? If not, I will. Well, I thought we were doing you a favor, but the big reason I just bring this bill up for the amendment to the committee, right now we have 110 special license plates, and it's not a function, I don't believe, of the state to be a collection agency other than maybe for a department. But we've had requests, and I think we've turned down a fair number again this session, where other than state agencies request to basically the state as a collection agency, and we don't get anything out of it because you can't make, they're not allowed to charge a fee for the special license plate. And that's why we're discussing this. And I can see Mr. Meyer's concern. There'd probably be less plates issued. But again, I think for the members of the committee, that's the reason we aren't talking about special license plates, because we get them all over, and with 110, some of those have to be screened out. There are not even, some of them are less than 100 issues, and they're costly, but they change the license plates now, they're flat plates, and they can do it with a decal. But the idea that the state should collect a fee and then reimburse it to a nonprofit or somebody, that just doesn't sell with me, and that's what's been kind of going on. And we'd like to slow down the DNR issuing their own plates, too, because it's fine if you come back to the committees, but we have a jurisdictional problem here. And the Susquehanna, they extended it for 2 years, and that ended last year. Now, I don't know how many, who's going to buy a Susquehanna plate next year. But anyhow, that's what they've done, and that came out of the Senate for the members of the House. That's really what the Senate did. And just for the information of the committee, when withdraw this amendment.
Thank you, Mr.
We are going to have some hearings on special license plates, and Representative Holbrook is going to help me.
And Mr. Chair, we shouldn't invite Representative Severson to that meeting.
That's right. If there are no further questions of the author or the testifier, are there questions? Now, thank you very much for coming in, Mr. Meyer.
Was the point made?
Now I know why I waited so long.
You did get the point.
But you know, just in sincerity, though, we decided, or not decided, but if this bill would have not come to this committee, it would have been recalled from the floor, because that's what's happening. And for Representative Eaton, we did it basically because, rather than losing time, I'm sure that would have been happened. We've been recalled from the bill was sent to us, so I thought we should just spend a few minutes and act on the bill. If there are no further questions, why, we can vote on Section 32. Any questions? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Your bill is passed, Representative Eakin, and be sent to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We have an announcement. We have someone. Representative Beard has an announcement.
I do, Mr. Chair, and laid on your desk here is a letter that's entitled Senate, and it's to Secretary Janet Napolitano from Homeland Security. Members, what we have is what I consider to be, and there may be a couple other members want to speak to this also, a serious issue with business and general aviation in this country. Homeland Security is extending their onerous, in my opinion, transportation security ideas right down to corporate and charter aviation. And to those of us that actually make that system work, this is a very heavy-handed, unworkable plan that has actually no benefit to national security at all. In fact, if anything, it'll probably drive a lot of business operators out of business, frankly. Again, to no net gain in security to the country. This letter that you see in front of you was drafted by the Minnesota Business Aviation Association. The members that you see on page 2 are all members of the Senate Transportation Committee, and they gladly signed the letter. And the letter's forwarded off to Washington. I'm requesting that we do the same from this committee, at least members who indicate that they would like to sign a letter like this. Representative Moore and I will have it drafted, probably on just neutral letterhead like this. Any member who would like to sign it from this committee, Mr. Chair, we would like to be able to send it to Department of Homeland Security under this Transportation Committee's auspices under our name with member signatures. I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Any questions? Not represent Bid. I think that's good because not only some of the identified airports here, there's others that have some corporate planes that really affect. So I think it'd be good.
Correct, Mr. Chair. I don't think we've even talked about Marshall and Schwan Foods and 20 or 30 others we could name if we wanted to take the time. But I think you get the point, members. It's
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, have you talked with Representative Oberstar on this? I mean, is this something he's willing to go to the administration on and weigh in?
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, thank you. I'll mention it to the gentleman lobbyist from MBAA. I know they're in touch with Representative Oberstar, and perhaps there are folks that can go there. The chair of the House Transportation Committee, he'd certainly have some clout with them as well. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Another thing for the committee members, next Tuesday we have a committee meeting, but we'll have the committee bill up, and I forgot that Monday is basically a day that we aren't here, and I told Representative Beard and Representative Holberg we'd have the bill to them on Monday. We probably will, because some of the staff is going to be here, and I'll be here, but we'll get the bill over you.
Okay.
At least on Monday sometime, because we come in at noon, so we'll still have...
Noon on Tuesday?
No, we don't have noon. Tuesday we come in, and that's right. But, you know, we'll get the bill to you as soon as we can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you on Tuesday.
We can email it. I know we can email it. Is Mr. Burris, is Judge okay too for emailing?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, because we had the breakdown. We knew we could email that. I didn't know about the total bill, but Mr. Burris says we can email the total bill, and we'll do that at least on Monday.
Okay.
No further questions? We'll see you next Tuesday. The meeting's adjourned.